Hey, welcome to Diary 101 Podcast. I am your host, Akakande Vakandepe, also known as Akan. As you know now, I have no specific way I introduce myself, but that's the only thing that's very consistent about the podcast is my intro, which I love with all my heart. God bless everybody that's here. With that being said, today's guest is somebody I have been looking forward to talk to, in the sense that surprisingly I didn't learn a lot about him till 5 minutes ago, which is awkward, right? Like, imagine meeting somebody and you're like, I didn't research that much, but I'm happy to have you, and you like scheduled it months before. That says a lot about my planning skills as a person. But with that being said, I loved how he introduced his name. Also discovered he's a podcaster, and I'm learning on how he's doing his podcast. He's been doing it since 2020. So that should be like 5 years down the line. I've been doing it for a year and I have questions on how everybody's surviving this. But I also enjoy it. Today's guest is Uwais. I think I said it correct. How are you doing?
I'm well. The family's on holiday, so I snuck into a room and we're doing the podcast. I go back to work after it and they get to rest, so there's no rest for the rest of us.
So you took the family on holiday and you used to get to work?
Yes, I still get to work, yes.
At least you're working from a nice, from a vacation. That's true. Vacation, right?
Yeah, that's it.
I think I'm doing the same thing. I traveled back home and we have a traditional ceremony tomorrow, which is Saturday. Yeah, and I'm in my grandmother's house and the house is getting a little bit crowded. It's a big house, but everybody is literally traveling back to the house so we could go to the traditional ceremony. So it's like, oh, does this count as vacation or not a lot? But yeah, I think it does. It depends.
It's all in the mind.
I swear, I had to find a spot in the house that is not loud, and I did. I found my grandmother's bedroom. I think it's soundproof, I think. So how did you come up with how to introduce yourself in terms of your name? In my head now, when I'm talking to you, it's Uwais. It sounds like a two without the T. How did you come up? I think that's like the smartest thing I've heard.
So my whole life, people have struggled with my name. It's not a long name, but it's not a name people hear every day. I hear it every day, but not everybody else does. So the easiest way to explain it is Uwais. It's two ways without the T. And as soon as I say two ways without the T, they're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Instead of trying to just say Uwais, because people always try and figuring it out. So two ways without the T. And it also, because it lends into the name of my podcast, which is Two Ways to Skin a Cat. So a little bit of a play on words there.
And I think it's also, because now it's stuck in my mind. Even if we get done with this, I will still Google your podcast. And I don't need to go on your LinkedIn profile. I am literally going to just say Two Ways to Skin a Cat. And I will find it because I'm like, he said it's this way, so I might as well just try it in different ways and I'll find it. So I think that, oh, that's the most shortest speech I've ever pitching. Like, I feel like that's a pitch somehow, because I'm like, oh, you killed two birds with one stone. Smart. There's also something I find interesting. I think you do your interesting, right? On your LinkedIn, you say, I help entrepreneurs improve their cash flow and grow their businesses by providing financial strategy advice and accounting services. I'm an accountant, by the way. I would have just said I offer accounting services. How did you come up with this?
So I've been using LinkedIn probably also since around 2020. And you have to stand out from the crowd. If I say I do accounting services and you say you do accounting services and every other person says they do accounting services, how does someone differentiate between the five of us? Also, if I use these words and somebody else uses the same words, it's difficult to say. Sometimes accountants, we like to use big words and legislative language and fancy accounting terms. Whereas entrepreneurs, although they are very smart, they don't always understand the accounting terms, and they shouldn't have to. So I try to make it easy for them to understand, because we're trying to provide a service to them. So they need to understand what service we provide, because they don't care. A lot of them don't care that they're getting accounting services. It's like, what do they get? Okay, they get improved cash flow. They get better tax planning. Okay, they get to save money. And then they understand, okay, from their perspective, this is what they gain from my services.
How long have you been in the industry?
I've been around for a long time. So I qualified in 2000. Well, I started working in 2008. And I qualified as a chartered accountant in 2011. Started working with startups and scale-ups specifically from 2016. So I was in corporate before that for quite a few years. But yeah, then I started working with startups and scale-ups. I prefer working with small businesses, because you get to do if you work in a big corporates, you work on like a 9-month project. Mm. And then you try and look at it in the income statement and you can't really see the impact. Whereas if you work with startups, you can work on something for a couple of hours, save them like 500,000 rand or 100,000 rand, or let's call it $50,000 even. Now they can appoint new people, or the owner, she can go on holiday at the end of the year because of the little bit of work that you did. So you can see the impact of the work that you do. And that's why I like working with small and medium-sized businesses.
So you've actually noticed the difference between like the startups, and the big corporates, in terms of the corporates have systems and they know what they want done. And it's, like you said, a 9-month project, and the startups is just in a few hours you can actually notice, oh, we actually did impact. So was that the reason why you transitioned from big corporates to startups?
It wasn't the reason at the time. It was, I wanted to try something new. I'm not afraid to try new things. And the only way you're going to figure out what you like is if you try it. You'll never know if you like something if you've never tried it before. I tried big corporate, I tried medium size. I said, let me try it. You can always, and the benefit of being an accountant is that generally there's always a job around for you. It might not necessarily be a job that you like, but you generally have a job. So you can take a little bit more risks in terms of trying different things, because you can always go back to corporate. You can always even go back to audit if you really need to. I was like, let's try something new. And I learned, you learn a lot, and you make a lot of mistakes, but you learn a lot on the way.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us don't try new things. We don't explore. I'll use the word explore, right? Like, what's too stuck on just that one thing that has been working, that we don't even try to see if I did something different, would the reward be higher? Or even if the reward is less, is my spirit, is it lighting my spirit? Am I happier? Or is it even fun? You know what I mean? I think it's something that we don't do. When you were a child, were you an explorer or just somebody that was keen on being on their books?
I probably was not an explorer. I was the nerd who was doing their books, to be honest with you. And only now, as I've become older and want to figure out what life is about and wanting to enjoy the things that you do from a day-to-day basis, then I started trying new things. Because I mean, when you're doing well at school, you don't like making mistakes. We were conditioned to get things right and not get things wrong. That's kind of how school prepares you for it. So I had to change my mindset as I got older.
That's interesting, because if I would meet you now and not have this conversation with you, I'd think you're an explorer, because just the last 9 years or 10 years of your life, you have been transitioning and trying new things and not trying to be somebody who does things perfectly. So it's very interesting that you were not growing up, you're not an explorer. And it also shows that you can really just change the narrative. It doesn't really have to be picture perfect. It doesn't have to be constant the whole time.
I will say that I was blessed to be to have a bit of a different perspective, because my mother and my father are from two different places in South Africa, and two different cultures. So I spend a lot of my holidays between the two, and you end up seeing the world very differently. Like, oh, in this culture, this is acceptable, and in this culture, this is acceptable. And it's not actually right or wrong. It's just the right or wrong in this scenario and right or wrong in it. So getting a different perspective, it makes you different, but that ends up being your superpower, because you don't get stuck in, some people can get very stuck in the place that they are in, and this is how life works, and not seeing things from a different point of view. But I was lucky enough to get different perspectives and be able to see things from a different perspective, because I got to see different cultures.
That's true. I think I was raised by my grandparents, and I'm always grateful that, unfortunately, we don't let the kids nowadays travel a lot to relatives without our supervision. But then I got to realize that there's a lot of growth that happened when, every time my grandparents said, okay, great, you're going to go to this different town, this is your aunt, you're going to stay for a month, you're going to stay for the school holiday, you have to make new friends, you have to adapt to new rules. So I did that all my childhood. And maybe that's why I'm back to traveling now, because I'm like, oh, you look at life differently when you meet new people, when you interact with them differently, that type of thing. So yeah, it's interesting that parents don't do it now. Maybe for also other reasons, but I also think there's so much benefit from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's probably safety reasons now that people don't do it as much as they did before.
It's indeed interesting that we don't trust our own relatives. Okay, let's say your own siblings, if you have siblings, like you don't trust your own siblings with your kid.
I guess it depends. I think if it's your siblings, it's fine, but I guess it becomes your cousins. So it's like one level split. It's a little bit further away. Whereas your siblings, like, okay, I grew up in the same house, I have an idea. Whereas if you didn't grow up in the same house, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, true. We grew up in the same house, not as siblings, but as cousins, but raised by my grandparents. So that would count as siblings too. Mm. So if I ever have kids, I'm shipping them off to their aunt. And we're going to talk about them and laugh. So yeah, I get where you're talking. I get where you're coming from. And I think because my mom's cousins, they also grew up in the same house, it's kind of a sibling relationship. So me traveling to their house was safe. Like, nothing ever happened to me. Nothing I can remember, but nothing. I was always safe. So yeah, I mainly think it's a safety thing. But yeah, we do it a lot with my younger sister, and it's interesting. When you look back to your childhood and your kids now, what's something you're trying to actively implant in them as they grow up?
What's a difficult question. So I guess that my kids are a little bit more, they have access to a little bit more, because I'm an accountant and I have a little bit more access to, it's called money. They have a little bit, I'm trying to give them more, like, to appreciate the value of money. And it's difficult when, like, oh, okay, they need money. Okay, can give them the money. Like, no, they actually need to appreciate the value of money, because when you grow up, we had to appreciate the value of money, and it wasn't as easy to come by. So I think that, and also, although I do think, like, when we were younger, I don't know about on your side, but respect is a lot more important. Whereas I think kids are a lot more, they question a lot more these days. I don't know if we didn't question, or it's just a different generation thing, and getting them to question maybe, but respectfully is something that's difficult to work on that.
Sorry, I didn't get that. You were saying that we question everything nowadays, right?
Well, kids question everything nowadays. Whereas when I was younger, we didn't really have a choice to question. You question too much, and you will get hiding.
I think it's a good thing. I think I grew up in a household where it depends who you questioned, right? Like you had to weigh the waters. So between my grandma and grandfather, who do you question the most? And I would lean towards my grandfather so I could talk back to my grandpa. I couldn't talk back to my grandma because you're going to get a beating. She's going to get a whip and beat you. Which is interesting because my grandfather was more strict and I actually noticed that she's more down. Good cop, bad cop. I noticed like, oh, he was more strict, but he acted like a good cop and we all didn't like her because she said no more. And he would say, oh, no, but your grandma said no, so I can't say yes. So, yes, I think the questioning is good because we would like to think on for ourselves. And I don't think, maybe it's a cultural thing that the elders don't like to be questioned. But for me, it's just give me a good reason why I'm doing it. And I always say that, like, just give me a good reason. So even as an adult, surprisingly, I still have to question a few stuff. And I'm like, oh, do I really? But I also find it annoying because my sister is 13 and she questions everything. And I'm just like, oh my goodness, it's okay for you to question. But I also tell her, it's okay for you to question. Let me explain why you're doing it. So you're still going to do it, even if you don't agree with it, because I'm older. But at least I did answer why. So, yeah, it's like, oh, I don't agree, but fine, you're older kind of thing, which is, yeah, I appreciate
that. And I think it's also a trust thing. Like, you can't explain everything. Certain things, otherwise you'll be explaining every day. So the important things, you're happy to explain. But certain things is like, just trust me, this needs to happen. Or just have some level of...
Yeah, it's the important things. And honestly, sometimes I always tell her, sometimes it's not everything you have to do. It's okay to be a little rebellious, even young. As long as you're not in danger, it's okay for you to say no. I'm not going to do that. But just know that if you're going to say no, there are consequences. And I think that's what I teach my sister. It's, I believe you're okay. You have free will. Just know I'm taking out something if you say no. Because I'm like, okay, cool. You say no. Are you exercising your rights? So what are we taking out of your list of things of benefits? It's like, ah, oh, okay. And she's now a teenager. So it's like really different on how you kind of parent or be a guardian and just look up to.
Yeah, you know, once they get to teenage, things can get tricky.
Chaotic. Why did you start your podcast? I realized that it was during COVID.
So I started listening to a lot of podcasts from Gary Vaynerchuk. I don't know if you've heard of him. And he talked a lot about... So he's a... he's this big entrepreneur in the US who's very, I mean, he's a marketer, he's a business, he's an investor, he's a business owner. And his podcasts are very good. And he talked a lot about your digital footprint, like creating content if you want to grow your business, or that is a good place to start. So I started first with just posting on LinkedIn, not even lives or not even podcasts, just like word posts, call it summarizing articles like 2 to 3 times a week. And after a while, just growing my own voice, and then starting, instead of summarizing people's articles, I started writing my own posts. And then there was a challenge that they had on LinkedIn and said, let's see if we can post every day. So then I started posting every day, well, in the weekdays at least. And there was a challenge. A lot of us who said, okay, let's, because it was COVID, it's like, let's get together, let's see what we can do in terms of becoming better, in terms of content creation. And the next step was podcasts, LinkedIn Lives. So I tried it out. And I think I just found a niche. And I worked on, obviously, my first podcast was obviously terrible. But I just kept at it, and I found, I don't know if you can call it a gap in the market, but many accountants in South Africa know me, which is weird because you almost become micro famous. Like you walk into a group room of accountants in South Africa and people will know you, and then you walk out of that room and nobody knows you. So it's quite interesting. But it just kept snowballing, and I just decided to be consistent. And so I'm one of the few people who just, I didn't do anything wow, I just kept being consistent, and you improve day, every episode is slightly better, you learn something new, and it also builds your network. So it's given me access to people's numbers on my phone that I'd never have if I didn't start the podcast. I can reach out to people that I would never have been able to reach out to if I just wanted to maybe send them a cold direct message or a cold email. Whereas it's helped grow my network quite significantly.
That's so true. I actually realized that my network is growing, and I didn't know. Even now, I still don't know what to do with my contacts on the podcast, which is interesting. But they're like amazing people doing amazing work. Yeah, I am looking back to what I was doing during COVID. I think that was my first year in university. And like most young adults, I was depressed and we got out of school. It's like we were in school for a month and we were told to be out of school for like 6 months. So yeah, it's interesting. So the podcast started because of a challenge. You wanted to learn more about content creation. Was it a way of staying in touch as well with reality during COVID?
I suppose it probably was a little bit because we were stuck in houses and I got to engage with other people. But I started the lives probably towards the end of 2020. So most of the lockdowns were starting to open up, I guess. So there wasn't as strict of a lockdown, but it was good to, I almost saw it as a challenge. I'm not actually I'm a bit of an introvert, but like if I go to networking events, my social battery drops very quickly after a while. But the nice thing about being online is that it doesn't drop. Having this conversation online is not, it's not as draining as in person. So I was like, okay, I found a medium that works for me. That doesn't give me drained afterwards. So just kept on going.
I think you and I are the same person. I avoid networking events. And I'm like, how do I build a company and be very limited with my social engagements? Because, not even because my battery just goes down. Like I always tell even my friends, we're not going to a crowded mall on a Sunday. Like I am not leaving the house on a Sunday for a crowded mall just for food. Like you're not... I always have those tiny things where I just say, I'm not leaving the house, guys. You will find me. But yeah, I also think this has been one thing that has been working for me. It's just, it's not draining. I actually get energized. I think introverts get energized when they have one-on-one conversations than group conversations. Yeah, like they have one-on-one conversations than group conversations. So, yeah, I think it's an introvert. I'm also an introvert, but a lot of people think I'm an extrovert. So it's also hard to keep up with that. What do you think was one of your biggest challenges during COVID when it came to work? Like, how was the transition like?
I think probably the biggest challenge, I actually enjoyed the remote work. Because I got to work from home. The challenge for me was, obviously, we had a book of clients, and a lot of them, some of them had to close, and some of them had to scale down. So a lot of them couldn't afford our fees, and we had to take salary cuts for that first few months, which was probably my biggest challenge, because your expenses don't reduce.
Yeah,
but all of a sudden your income is reduced, and you have to figure it out with a wife and kids. That okay, there's certain sacrifices that need to be made. So I think that was probably the biggest challenge.
In terms of work, you talked about how you love working with startups, and during COVID you noticed that, majority of the startups had to close because if some of them were operational because of, they had to be physical to operate and everybody was in the lockdown, only needs, like things that were estimated necessary were let on to operate. And as an accountant, you have to be the bearer of bad news to say, hey, I think you're going to cut more losses if you could just close it down now and not leave it operational. How does it feel to be the person in the room that always has to say that? People actually don't like accountants. I realize that now that I'm one.
Look, it's a difficult conversation to have because to an entrepreneur, their business is their baby, and you just tell them that their baby's going to die, you know? So it's not news that they want to hear, but they also need to hear it because if you know there's a train coming to you, rather be able to jump earlier than just before it's about to hit you. Yeah. But I think accountants some people don't like accountants, so it's partly also accountants' fault in that we also need to be able to converse in entrepreneur language. So I always used to tell my team, you can't tell the entrepreneur, oh, we need to comply with Section 11E/F of the Income Tax Act, because and subsection this that the entrepreneur doesn't care and then says, oh, if we don't comply with this act, the fine is 50,000. Clear and concise. Like, if they explain it to them in from their point of view, oh, if you don't do this, the business has to shut down. So also need to explain it from their point of view, how it benefits them. Because sometimes there's certain legislation that you need to comply with, but there's no actual penalty if you don't comply. So then they ask, so why am I doing this? Oh, because the legislation says so. Okay, what is the consequence of not complying? Then it's a problem. So you have to talk in their language. Sometimes we send these complex cash flow forecasts or these complex financial models, and that's great, but sometimes the entrepreneur doesn't know how to read it. So you actually need to summarize it in a way that they understand. The cash flow forecast says you're going to run out of money in October. Okay, now they can use that information. But if you don't explain it in a way that's valuable to them, it doesn't mean much to them.
You've been in the industry for more than 15 years, or 20. Well, you're almost clocking 20 years, I think. What are some of the trends and shifts you've noticed?
The thing that I always found interesting was, and especially in working with small businesses. So when you're working in corporates, large listed companies, they can sort of trend towards, if the economy is on an up, is doing well, the large company is doing well. If the economy is contracting, the large company is kind of tends to go to in line with the economy. And that's why economists are very worried about GDP growth and why is the country not growing, what's the inflation rate and things like that. Whereas if you're working with small businesses, it doesn't necessarily mean that because the economy is doing poorly that the business will be doing poorly. The small business owner might have found a gap in the market that is stealing market share from someone else. They might be doing it more efficiently at a much, much better price or adding much more value than another company, or created a market that wasn't there before. So it's not as much tied. Obviously, if the economy is doing well, it's easier to do well for any business. But I found it quite interesting that, okay, I remember in 2018, I still had the big business mindset. I was like, okay, the economy is not doing well. I expect some of my clients are probably not do well. And then my clients were doing well. And I was like, why are they doing well? Oh, they found a gap in the market. They found the place where nobody else was, found a service that nobody else could provide, and so they were still doing well, even though the economy wasn't doing well.
That's true. There's this trend that's coming in, and we're now using more technology as accountants, and yeah, we're using more technology, and we're incorporating AI in our work, but we also have standards we have to follow. So with somebody that's been in the industry and working with a lot of startups that are incorporating technology, how do you see AI impacting our work in a good and bad way?
I think there's a lot of fear that, AI is going to be taking our jobs, or it's going to be automating things and there'll be no need for... I don't think AI will be taking our jobs, especially not in the next 20 years. I think the accountant who knows how to use AI well will be taking business from the accountant who's not using technology, because the accountant who's using AI well can do it more efficiently, so we'll be able to price things better and be able to provide more value, or provide more value at the same rate. So my only problem is that because I'm at my level, there's so much to be done. I just don't have enough time to do as much research on AI as I want to. So I blocked out some time in December and started the course. Halfway through the course, I was like, okay, I need a break. Took a break and I haven't finished my course yet. So that's one thing that I need to finish, is I know there's lots of value. It's just about applying your skills and making sure you upskill yourself in a way that you can provide value to your clients.
When you look back to your life, when you look back to 2008 and to 2025, to where the accounting industry has moved to, what has surprised you with the shift and transition of the industry?
When I was doing audit, we still had paper files, which were like one of the last few big four accounting firms were doing paper files. So I remember flying to Joburg with a printer in my hand and a stack of paper, because you had to print out our working papers and put it in the thick LibreArch file and bring it back. And then we were one of the few, we started with the conversion into digital. So that was the first big step. I remember even when we used to go to clients, when I started working, Google Maps wasn't a thing yet. So we used to literally print out, we used to take that map book, print out the page, and then highlight kind of, this is where you're starting and this is where you need to go. So we had like printed sheets of how, so there was no Google Maps. So that was quite interesting, trying to get to clients. So the industry has changed completely. We used to spend most of our time at the clients auditing, where I assume now auditors, they get the option of going to the clients, because I have in our company, we have some auditors and they generally do everything online. I provide everything they need to in a folder, and they come into office once in a while if they need to, but most of the things are done remotely. From an accountant point of view, there's no real need to be at a client 24, every day, unless you are operational. And you're not, and so you're doing more operational work than accounting work. There's no need to be on site all the time. And I know lots of people who are working remotely for companies on the other side of the world, because you have that benefit.
So I actually, Kada said the same thing. Kada talked about how you all used to print out everything and just do everything so physical. He also talked about counting money physically. It's interesting that you guys get to have the same answer. Still on your younger self, but a little bit younger, did you ever think you'd be an accountant, or you had other options?
So I only found out about accounting as a career in grade 12. I didn't know about it before, because where we came from, there wasn't like, I was the first person in my family to qualify as a chartered accountant. I hadn't really met any before. I think I had met someone who was doing business science, I think information systems or something like that. So I thought, okay, that seems like an interesting career. Maybe I'll do that. And then I ended up being selected to go for a course, not a course, almost like a 3-day workshop at one of the accounting firms in Matric. And I went for that. And after I went for that, I was like, okay, that's what I'm going to study. Because I was always good at accounting. I was good at math. I enjoyed accounting. But yeah, I didn't have this big plan for my life. I kind of just took it as it comes. What's the opportunity? See what you can learn from it. And then take that opportunity. And if you enjoy it, go for it. And if you don't enjoy it, try something new.
Surprisingly, I am learning a lot from you in terms of most people we have on the podcast have, hey, I did envision my life this way and I worked towards it and I made a plan and the plan was this and that and that. But you sound like, hey, I literally just by coincidence found out about accounting. I honestly didn't have a plan and life happened and I'm successful in it. That kind
I'm
of
we're gonna have a plan for the next, like I kind of have an idea of what I want, but you plan one way and life can take you another way. So I don't mind pivoting. I don't mind trying new things. If you had told me 5 years ago that I would be on a podcast right now, I'd probably say not a chance, because I hadn't started my podcasting journey. And if you told me, oh, I'd be I've had this much impact on LinkedIn, I would have said not a chance. So I'm open to trying new things. I've had the opportunity to travel in the last 2 years overseas, which I've never had to do before. So 3 years ago, you had told me I would have traveled to 4 different places internationally. I would have told you not a chance. So I'm just trying. I'm seeing how the world works, seeing what opportunities come to me, and trying to take the opportunities that come.
Why I like this conversation a lot is that someone will be listening to it, right? And they'll be thinking, that's me right now. And that gives them hope because they really don't have to fixate on a bigger plan. They can have an idea. They can know how they want life to look like. But they don't have to fixate on it. Like they don't have to be like me. I always have a plan and it never goes as planned, but I always have my plan, right? So, yeah, and I think that also speaks on the purpose of what the podcast is about. It's supposed to serve people differently. The guests are supposed to enlighten them on their path. And honestly, we're all on different paths. We're planners, some are not. I learned to be a planner. But yeah, I think that's what I find more intriguing is that you really are more easygoing than I thought. And surprisingly, it's working out for you. So what advice would you give to your younger self?
I suppose my advice to my younger self would be, don't worry, you will figure it out. When I was younger, I never really knew what I wanted to do. Never knew whether I would find my place. Always feeling a little bit out of place, like I don't fit in completely, because I kind of straddled these two different cultures and trying to fit in. And then life happens and you realize it's okay not to fit in, and not fitting in is actually your superpower and not your weakness, because you end up understanding different people and finding your niche. So I think I've found my niche. Not to say that my niche won't change, but I'll figure it out. Because always involved, you're like, I don't know what I want to do. I don't know exactly what I want to be in for the rest of my life. But you don't have to figure that out completely. You get, as long as you are happy doing the things you're doing on a day-to-day basis, and you're learning and you're growing, that's more important.
Nice. If you'd look back, do you have any favorite childhood memory?
Interesting question, Matt. Probably my favorite childhood memory is just again, getting the opportunity to travel. So I've gotten an opportunity to see South Africa. And a lot of people, I'm from Cape Town, and a lot of people from Cape Town, or the majority of people from Cape Town that come from my area, don't travel. So they don't know the rest of South Africa. I've got to spend a lot of time in KwaZulu-Natal. I spent a lot of time in the Free State. I spent a lot of time in Gauteng. So I get to see that the world is very different in these different provinces. And that's probably the thing I appreciate the most from my childhood, is I had the opportunity to travel. I had the opportunity to take the bus. So I've taken the train, the bus. I've done all the different transport. I've been able to fly. So I've done the cheapest mode of transport and a little bit more expensive. I've got an opportunity to do all the different things.
I haven't used a train before. I think it's the one thing I would try doing is to use the train. I'm trying to think of, I was in South Africa, I think, last year, and I also realized that you somehow give American vibes, because if you come to Zambia, I think you have an average experience in all towns. Like, you see similarities and things that bring us together. You kind of feel like it's the same people. I think South Africa has different cultures everywhere. It's like you're going, if you go to Joburg, it's a different culture. If you go to Cape Town, it's a different culture. It's different people. It's a different way of life. Can you pick a favorite culture, or you have to be, could you be biased if you'd say, if I'm in Joburg, I love the experience of this and that. Cape Town gives me this type of energy that I like to just sometimes don't feel more productive in. Do you have that bias?
It's very interesting you say about American vibes. Because I was in New York, and then I traveled to Los Angeles, and it's very different. The people are very different as well. Between the two, and the vibes are very different. I think from a South African point of view, each one has its, like, when you compare Joburg, Durban, and Cape Town, each has its pros and has its cons. If you think about Joburg, if you want to make money, that's where you need to go. It's easier to make friends. It's easier to assimilate. But obviously, the crime is a problem, et cetera, et cetera. If you go to Cape Town, obviously it's got the mountain. You get to, it's a beautiful place to, if you want to socialize, if you want to get fit. It's the place, a lot of investments happen there. So that's where kind of the money is, but the cost of living is a lot higher. And it's a straight, like, there's pros and cons. The city is very different. It's a little bit more segregated, I guess. And then you go to Durban. Cape Town is segregated and accepting. It's a bit of a strange one. And you go to Durban, it's a different vibe altogether. I probably don't think I could survive in Durban. I normally go there for a holiday, and after 4 days, I'm like, okay, cool, I've seen everything. Because things close early. It's a bit slower. And it's also different. There's different groups in each of them. So they all have positives and negatives, and I wouldn't pick one over the other. Obviously, I'm biased because I stay in Cape Town and my family's here, so it just makes life easier. But yeah, there's pros and cons to each.
Oh, yeah. I think it's pros and cons to everything, to be honest. But that was like a really good, now I know where to make the money and friends, and where to come when I want to just vacation and be fit. Thanks. I'd like to give you this opportunity to ask me a question.
So I've been, most of my podcasts are, let's call it 20 minutes to 30 minutes long. So you've done a proper sessions of an hour. You've been doing it for a year. So maybe my question to you, well, I've got two questions. The first is, why did you decide to start the podcast? And what was your reasoning behind choosing the full hour specifically? Because there must be a reason. Everybody chooses, I suppose everybody's got their niche, but why did you decide, okay, I'm going to go into detail and depth of a full hour for the podcast?
The first question was, I needed to improve my public speaking. Yeah, everybody assumed that I'm really good at speaking in front of a crowd. And I also needed to improve my listening skills, like active listening and paying attention to people. Those are not my strengths. So yeah, I also thought, hey, I always need to do something different every year, which was last year, to kind of improve myself and grow as a person. Yeah, and podcast was like next on the list. So it's whatever I did in 2022 got me to go to America in 2023. Whatever I did in 2023 got me to go to South Africa and other places in 2024. And I was like, hey, if I can't do the same thing every year. I always get the same results. So what's the one thing or the few things I can do differently? Yeah. On a self-serving purpose, I've never said this anywhere. Like self-serving, that's like my main reasons on a personal level. On an organizational level, we use the podcast for different things. We're trying to kind of have to gather people, create a community for the podcast and collect data and learn about our target audience. Yeah, so that's what the business is in. But on a personal level, those are like my main reasons why I did it. I just needed to improve. Actually, so the podcast is just not, for the second question, the podcast is not just an hour. Sometimes it's more than an hour. I recorded almost a 2-hour podcast last week.
Wow, yeah. That's long.
Yes, because the conversation just keeps going. Firstly, because I can't do shallow conversations. Like, I'm not on a surface person, right? I'm very curious to just dig in. And 20 minutes would mean I don't have that time for that. So I'm a deep conversation type of person. I know it's going to start on a high, it's going to settle, and it's going to finish on a high. So I really want to feel those emotions. And an average time of an hour is what I give everybody, and others just it keeps going and we just keep having the conversation. So yeah, it's that I'm just like a deep conversation type of person. So a lengthy conversation is what I need. And on the other thing, everybody keeps telling me the podcast to fail because it's so long. And I'm thinking, there are people out there that still want to have deep conversations. I think we always want instant stuff. We always want everything to be fast-paced. That I'm like, no, guys, I listen to podcasts for more than an hour, and those guys are making millions. And everybody keeps, the other side is like, hey, you're not that famous. And I'm like, not yet.
Not yet. Keywords, not yet.
Yeah, not yet. So the other thing is, like, everybody keeps telling me the podcast to fail. So I'm like, I'll still have, because I've been told, make it shorter. And I'm like, no, I won't make it shorter. I will make it an hour plus, and those interested will gather around us and we'll have this conversation. But yeah, it's interesting. And also, I'm just very grateful that I can afford to do this right now. So I leave a week at a time to be able to just release the episodes.
Makes sense.
Why did you pick 20 minutes or less, or an average of 30 minutes?
I guess it was because I was interviewing my guests. My podcast is a lot about learning from. So it's aimed at young professionals who didn't have, like, when I started, I didn't have mentors or people who came before me in my family who could share the knowledge with me. So my podcast was mainly about helping the young professionals now learn from other people's mistakes. So I would generally ask questions about the main challenges that someone is experiencing or experienced in their career. So I only need to ask a few questions to get that answer. And that's how I got to 20 to 30 minutes. Sometimes we talk about different things, but a lot about it's just getting those main issues and sharing the main stumbling blocks in someone's career. That was the main reasoning behind it. And sometimes I would have a follow-up episode if it was something that, okay, we really need to go into something more detailed. But yeah, generally, because it's aimed at young professionals and the aim is talk about the different hurdles that people had to jump through, the different mistakes that they made, generally it only needs to last about that long.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I also do like some, I have my favorite short episode, our podcast is by Morgan Housie. Yeah, the guy that wrote The Psychology of Money. It's like an average of 15 minutes and I like it. He's straight to the point and I'm like, hey. Then I have the Diary of a CEO that's like, I don't know, it depends on how he feels about life, but it's always an average of an hour, 90 minutes. Yeah, 90 minutes. And I'm like, hey, I will listen to these in parts. So yeah, it's always like the balance of having others do them long and having others do them short, but everything just working out.
I agree. I also think it's a nice, for me, half an hour is a nice, it's not taking up too much of my time. I've got with the work that I've got and the family that I have to manage. So it's a good time slot to work, to block out every week.
Yeah, and I also think that you still get, it's like, I think the podcast is for you, so you still get your you time, even if it's just an average of 30 minutes. Like, I really still did get my you time in this, and I'm happy that I did. What do you look forward to?
I enjoy traveling, which I mentioned, but so that's more of a long term. Where am I going to next? Or am I going on holiday? I am a bit of a planner when it comes to, I'm an accountant, so I like structure. I want to know what I'm doing for the next week or the next month. Which is interesting because I don't really worry that much when it comes to 2, 3, or 4 years, but I'm quite regimented when it comes to the short times. So I look forward to, I enjoy running, so I'm looking forward to running. I've been a bit sick the last few days, so I haven't run in a while. Because running helps me decompress and just think about life, and otherwise my brain keeps running. Yeah. So look forward to running. I still look forward to my weekends, not as much as I used to, like, because I now work in a job that I enjoy doing day by day. So it's not, I remember doing articles just like, okay, we need to survive until the weekend. So at least I'm not in that situation anymore. But it's mainly, I enjoy running. I help a little bit with my daughter's soccer team, so that's also fun. But I mean, mainly looking forward to traveling, seeing the world.
Nice. Youssef, thank you so much for being here and being on the podcast. I loved learning about you and your work and your thought process. And yeah, I hope this was also a way of you to just learn about yourself and the next steps and just to think through a little few stuff. So I'm really grateful for the opportunity to have you on the podcast.
No, thanks, it was fun. I'm normally not on the side of the camera. I'm normally the one asking the questions. So interesting being on the other side.
I think you did well, from a podcaster to a fellow podcaster. Like, I think you did great. I know how it feels. I try to avoid interviews because I don't know what to do for them. But hey, I get being called for them. So yeah, I think you did great.
I think I'm glad it out.
Do you have any last thoughts?
No, I think we've covered it. It was a very interesting session. Now I know what a full 1 hour podcast session feels like. I'll keep that in mind for my ones going forward.
Now you know. So it's been great. And for everybody listening, thank you so much for tuning in and listening to Youssef and I pick his head on accounting. I hope you all know that, hey, as much as I love business, but I also know the importance of accountants in business and what they do. So yeah, so it's been fun picking the head of another accountant. Yeah, I think that's one industry I'm tapping into a lot, maybe because I'm one. With that being said, please share this with a friend and let us know your thoughts. And if you want to learn more about Yusuf's work, I will be sharing his info in the bio. Bye for now.
Bye.